I'm going to be in Luke chapter 5, same passage that was read to us just earlier. But I want to begin by first of all saying that the gospel of Jesus Christ is completely unlike religion. What Jesus brings during his life and ministry on earth, it's totally different than all religious systems. It doesn't match any of them. Any of the religious systems of the world, the gospel doesn't fit. The gospel of Jesus Christ is utterly unique. There's nothing like it. It changes people. Not with a bunch of rules and regulations, but from the inside out. It changes hearts. And what we want to do this morning is I want to look at this text that was read for us this morning, Luke chapter 5, verses 33 to 39. And what we want to see from this text is how Jesus brings joy and freedom rather than empty religion. Jesus brings joy and freedom rather than empty religion. And this is how we want to approach the text. We want to frame it like this. First of all, we're going to see an issue. That is, Jesus is going to be confronted by some people about a particular issue. We're going to look at that. And then secondly, we're going to see some insight. Jesus' response to this confrontation. And then we're going to conclude things by looking at two illustrations from the text. So once again, you've got an issue, some insight, and two illustrations. That's how it's going. Okay, so let's begin. Let's get going. Let's begin first of all by looking at the issue from verse 33. The issue. Luke writes, "And they said to him, the disciples of John fast and offer prayers, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but yours eat and drink." And what we kind of got to figure out is what's going on here. We're kind of jumping in the middle of something that's happening, a bit of a conversation that's occurring. And what we have here is a statement that's addressed to Jesus. He's approached by a group of people who decide they want to share a little bit of an observation that they've made with him. They've noticed something is different about his disciples. Both John the Baptist's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fasted, but Jesus' disciples, they didn't. You kind of got one of these little remember on Sesame Street, one of these things is not like the others. One of these things just isn't the same. And these guys approach Jesus. It's probably a mixed bunch of John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees. And they want to know why that is. Why aren't your disciples like us? And they make this statement expecting some sort of response from Jesus, some sort of explanation, which he's going to give us in a second. But first, we kind of got to figure out what all the fuss is about. What's this question about? Where is it coming from? The Pharisees, the disciples of John, wanted to know why Jesus' disciples didn't fast. And to us, that seems like a strange issue. Like, why are you getting all bent out of shape about that? But what you got to understand is that fasting was a huge deal for the Jewish people. There was all kinds of fasts in the Old Testament. There's all kinds of fasts for different lengths of time and for different reasons. Some fasts would last for a day or two, and others were longer. In Daniel chapter 10, for example, we're told of how Daniel fasted from meat and wine and delicacies for 3 weeks. And then in Exodus 34, We read of how Moses fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. That's just a couple of examples. So fasting had this long history in the Jewish religious community. And the question is, why? What was the big deal? What was the purpose behind it? Why'd they do it? Well, if I can start, first of all, by just kind of simply explaining in a general sense what fasting is. Not that you don't know, but just in case. Fasting is to abstain from or do without things that you would normally enjoy for the purpose of seeking God. So people would fast, and people still do fast as a show of humility, possibly grieving and desperation before the Lord. Fasting often happens during intense times of seeking the Lord that come together with prayer. That's sort of fasting in a nutshell. And the interesting thing about fasting, I've mentioned how it was a huge deal for the religious Jews. But there's only one fast that's actually commanded in the Old Testament. There's only one fast that was actually required by the Old Covenant law, and that was on the Day of the Atonement. One day a year, the people of Israel were commanded to deny themselves things that they would normally enjoy, including food. And this was to be a day of brokenness and contrition over their own sin and the sins of the whole nation. It was to be a day for them to look to the Lord to remove their guilt and sin. This was only required once a year, the only commanded fast. But what happened through the course of Israel's history is that people decided that fasting was something that really spiritual people do. This was an indicator of true devotion to God. And that's why these guys, they go all spirituality police on Jesus. In their minds, the really devoted people fasted a lot. I mean, you take the Pharisees themselves, for example. They fasted regularly, 2 times a week. And what they would do is they would walk around looking all gloomy and sad, wearing ratty clothes or sackcloth, this scratchy, uncomfortable material. And they would do all of this as a sign of grieving, mourning, desperation for the Lord. They would even put ashes on their head or on their faces. So you can imagine these guys are walking around looking pretty miserable, and everybody would know that they're fasting. And they took something that God had commanded them to do only once, and they made it a regular requirement. They went above and beyond what God required and said, this is what devotion to God looks like. They came up with their own standards of righteousness. We call that legalism. And the Pharisees were all about keeping God's law. They were all about trying to make sure that not only they did what the Lord commanded, but that everybody else did as well. And so they came up with a bunch of rules and regulations and rituals to help you keep God's law. So they came up with laws to help you keep God's law. And then they took those things and they made them the mark of true spirituality. In their minds, followers of God not only kept the Old Testament law, but they kept a bunch of extra requirements as well. And so while fasting is what the Pharisees and these disciples of John confront Jesus about in our text, the actual issue is way bigger than that. This is the third of 5 occasions in a section of Scripture from Luke chapter 5, verse 17 to Luke chapter 6, verse 11, where Jesus is confronted by the Pharisees. We looked at one on last week, if you remember. Jesus heals a paralyzed guy, and who's in the building? Who's in the room? The Pharisees. They don't say anything, but they're grumbling in their hearts about Jesus. They have doubts about what he says and what he does. And then in the section just before our text for this morning, they start tripping because him and his disciples are eating with tax collectors and sinners. They get all bent out of shape about that. And still, they don't go directly to Jesus. They go to his disciples. And here, they actually confront Jesus about this issue of fasting. We're going to see a couple of more instances in the weeks to come. But in each of these situations, the issue in their minds is, why don't Jesus' disciples act like us? Why don't they follow the rules? Why don't they live like the rest of us religious folk? I mean, in the eyes of the Pharisees, Jesus and his disciples looked like they weren't very devoted to God, like they didn't care much about God's laws. I mean, they charged Jesus with blasphemy, if you remember, on last week. Here's a guy, in their eyes, who's claiming to be able to do something that only God can do. And then on top of that, he and his disciples are eating with people that we would never associate with. And then this morning, they don't fast. Jesus' disciples didn't fit the mold. They didn't fit the expectation of how religious people were supposed to live. They didn't keep up a bunch of rules and outward appearances of religion. And Jesus is going to explain to us why in verse 34. What Jesus does in verse 34 is he gives these folks that are confronting him and us some insight into why his disciples don't live like other religious people. He begins to explain the difference between his disciples and religious folk. But he does it in a bit of a curious way. It's kind of strange, almost. He explains himself by asking a question. And so here they are, the Pharisees and the disciples of John. They come to Jesus looking for an explanation as to why his disciples don't live like they do. And Jesus responds with a question. Look at verse 34. It says, "And Jesus said to them, 'Can you make wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them?'" As if it wasn't strange enough that Jesus answers them with a question, it almost doesn't seem to make sense. Here they are talking about fasting, and he starts talking about weddings. It's almost like he's dodging the question. But he's actually making a point. So let's just take a look at what he asks, this question. Let's take this question by itself and think about the answer. I mean, I think the question is pretty clear, but let me rephrase it just in case. Jesus says, "Can you make wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them?" You might put it this way. Can you invite a bunch of people to a wedding and then in the middle of the reception say, "Oh yeah, by the way, there's no food and no drinks. We're all going to fast." Can you do that? I suppose you could, but the point of the question is that appropriate? Is that appropriate? And the answer to that question is, of course, no. Fasting and weddings don't mix. And so at the most basic level, Jesus is saying certain kinds of conduct are inappropriate for certain situations. Certain kinds of conduct are inappropriate for certain occasions, which is a no-brainer, right? We understand that. We get that. That makes sense. That's why you don't show up to a formal dinner dressed like you're about to go to the gym or to the beach. And that's why you don't cheer at a funeral like you would at a football game. We understand this. Certain kinds of conduct and behavior are inappropriate for certain occasions. And so in answer to the question of why his disciples don't fast, why they don't live like other religious people, Jesus essentially says, because that doesn't match. The kind of behavior, the kind of things that the Pharisees were all concerned about, It doesn't fit the occasion. Jesus' disciples can't be expected to live like the Pharisees with all their rules and regulations because something is different. Something has changed. There's something about Jesus and his ministry that makes life different. Jesus uses this image of a groom and guests at a wedding, not just because he thinks it's a neat way to make a point, but again, he's teaching something about himself. He's the bridegroom. Just as in this imagery, you have a bridegroom who's present, which makes sense, at a wedding. Jesus is saying, I'm the bridegroom, and his disciples are his friends or the guests at the wedding. And it's helpful for us to know that this imagery is used several times in the Old Testament. Several times in the Old Testament, you read of the relationship between God and his people being compared to the relationship between a husband and a wife, or a bride and a groom, and God, of course, being the groom. And Jesus is picking up on that language, and he says, I'm the groom. I'm the one that you guys are supposed to be waiting on. And now I'm here. So it's time to celebrate. Jesus is connecting his life and his ministry with joy and freedom and celebration. What kind of occasion is a wedding? You show up at a wedding and mope and groan and look all sad and pathetic? No. It's a celebration. It's full of joy. This is totally different from the religion of the Pharisees. They were all about making a big deal, about keeping rules and fasting. And remember, what did we talk about earlier? Just briefly, I mentioned it. What was fasting associated with? Grieving. Mourning. And Jesus says, what kind of sense does that make? What do my disciples look like grieving and mourning when I'm here? That doesn't fit the occasion. They can't fast as long as I'm with them. But notice what he says in verse 35. He says, the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast. Jesus, even here, is referring to his death. Even at this point, this early in his ministry, Jesus is aware of the fact that he's going to die. He pops up on the scene, and within 3 short years, he's going to be hanging on a cross as a substitute for sinners. And then his disciples would fast. Then they would grieve and mourn. But not now. Not while he's with them. The celebration is on. You see, Jesus was inaugurating something new. He was beginning something new, something that was completely unlike the religion of the Pharisees. The Pharisees were still committed to living under the old covenant law, under the Mosaic law with all its rules and rituals and commands. They even tacked on a bunch of rules that they made up themselves. You see, this was way bigger than just fasting for the Pharisees. This was a whole way of life. A whole way of life in which devotion to God was all about making sure you kept all the rules. No joy. No freedom. Just make sure you keep the rules. Now I ask you, does that sound like joy or a drag? And what happens with the Pharisees is they look at the old covenant law. They look at the law that was handed to them by God through Moses. And you know what they say? We can do this. We can do this. All we got to do is make sure we keep all the rules, make sure everybody else keeps the rules, and then we're okay. And Jesus shows up and says, you guys just don't get it. You don't get it. You're missing the point. There's something about the coming of Jesus that changes things. In the coming of Jesus, there's a new occasion that calls for some new conduct, a new way of living. You see, rituals and rules and religious regulations do not produce rejoicing in the heart. Only Jesus does that. Only Jesus and the gospel that he proclaims can do that. Jesus' disciples didn't fast all the time. They didn't live like the Pharisees and other religious folk trying to keep a bunch of rules and regulations. They lived differently. Because when Jesus came, he initiated something new. A new era. A new age. And what characterizes this new age that Jesus initiates and his disciples is celebration and joy and freedom. We've seen how the fuss about fasting, this confrontation about fasting is really bigger than fasting. It's about why Jesus' disciples don't act like other religious people. And we've seen a little bit of Jesus' explanation as to why that is. And it has everything to do with him and his coming. Jesus has come and he's inaugurated this new era. A new era of joy and freedom and celebration. And his disciples are to act and live accordingly. Now, our last point, we want to see two illustrations. Jesus is going to use a parable that involves two illustrations. And what I want us to do is simply look at these two illustrations, try to figure out what Jesus is saying, and then figure out how it applies to us. So let's read, beginning with verse 36. It says, he also told them a parable. No one tears a piece from a new garment and puts it on an old garment. If he does, he will tear the new, and the piece from the new will not match the old. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the new wine will burst the skins, and it will be spilled, and the skins will be destroyed. But new wine must be put into fresh wineskins. And no one, after drinking old wine, desires new, for he says, the old is good or better. And the first thing we got to figure out is what in the world is Jesus talking about? What is he saying? What's all this talk of old garments, new garments, old wineskins, wine? What is he getting at? Well, at the most basic level, I think what Jesus is saying is pretty straightforward. He's saying you can't mix the old with the new. It just doesn't work. And then he gives us two examples. So illustration number one, talking about garments or clothes. Just think of a pair of jeans, for example. Nobody, and I mean nobody, in their right mind, tries to patch up an old busted pair of jeans by cutting a piece of cloth from a new dress shirt or a blouse. Ladies, do y'all say blouse? Or a lady shirt, whatever you call it. Nobody does that. Why not? Because all of a sudden now you got two busted articles of clothing. Ruined pair of pants, and now you ruined your nice new shirt. It doesn't work. Illustration number two. This one is a little bit further removed from us. We don't resonate with this one as much. Jesus is talking about wine and wineskins. And without spending too much time here, I'll just say this. In Jesus' day, they used animal skins, most likely like sheep and goats. And what they would do is that we use them to make containers for wine. And so how this would work is, you lop off the head, the legs, skin it, remove all the hair, sew up all the holes except the hole in the neck, and fill it with wine. And that's what they would use to carry wine, or to contain wine. I know it sounds pretty disgusting, but apparently it was effective. So that's what they did. And the reason that you didn't want to put new wine into old wineskins is this. For starters, wine has to go through a process of fermentation. Like over time, wine changes and it creates gases, and those gases expand. And so new wine needs room to ferment, to expand. And wineskins, when they started to get old, they get brittle and less flexible. They don't give as much as they used to, kind of like our bodies. And so you take the two and you put them together and you got a recipe for disaster. You end up with busted wineskins and wasted wine. You can't mix the old with the new. They're incompatible. It doesn't work. Now, what's the point? What is Jesus trying to say? That's the point on its most basic level. But how does that apply to this whole discussion? Jesus is saying that you cannot mix the kind of religion that the Pharisees followed with what he's bringing, with what he brought in his life and ministry. Remember, the Pharisees are still trying to live under the old covenant law with all its rituals and rules. And Jesus comes along, he says, no, I'm initiating something radically different and new. He comes with the gospel, with a new covenant, something that brings freedom and rejoicing. Jesus is contrasting the old covenant with the new. And what I want to do is just briefly take 5 minutes or so just to talk about what life would have been like for us under the old covenant. And I want to start by, first of all, just kind of defining something of the old covenant. The first time we see mention of the old covenant, you don't see that language, but you see the substance of it. It's in Exodus chapter 19. You don't need to turn there, but what you see there is the Lord comes to Moses and he says to Moses, this is what you're to tell the people of Israel. Like, if they obey my voice, then they will be my people. That was the basic agreement. You do what I say, you'll be my people. And with that agreement came a long list of detailed laws and rules. Things that told the people how they were supposed to live, what they could and couldn't do. So, for example, under the old covenant, you couldn't just pray anytime you wanted to, anywhere you wanted to. You had to pray at specific times, in specific places, and you had to go through a priest. You couldn't pray on your own. You had to go to a priest. And if you sinned, you had to bring a sacrifice. And even if you sinned unintentionally, you sinned and you didn't know it, you had to bring a sacrifice. So imagine if every Sunday you have to show up with a sacrifice for your sins, preferably a goat or a sheep. If you can't afford one of those, a turtle dove or a pigeon, maybe you can snatch one of these seagulls running across the parking lot. One of those. If you can't afford a bird, you got to bring flour. And not just a little bag, specifically 22 liters of flour. And then you couldn't offer those sacrifices yourself. You got to give them to a priest, and he does it. And you think it's over, you got to do it again next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and the week after that, on and on and on. And you think that's bad. You like pork? No bacon. No pork roast. Against the old covenant law. Same thing with certain kinds of shellfish. Those are off limits as well. And suppose you're a woman and you gave birth to a child. You had a kid recently. Here's the rules. You have a girl. You can't come to church now for 80 days. You have a little boy. You can't come for 40 days. And there's more. Young people, or anybody, dealing with their parents. You disrespect your parents this past week? Get smart with them? Talk back to them? You could have been stoned to death. You would have been stoned to death for that under the old covenant law. Killed. No questions asked. It keeps going. How many people in this building right now are wearing an article of clothing, pair of pants, shirt, pair of socks, a hoodie that's made of more than one material. To be honest now, every last one of us guilty under the old covenant law. And the list just goes on and on and on. And we haven't even started talking about all the festivals and ceremonies and holidays that you have to keep. This was life under the old covenant, keeping up with a bunch of rules. But Jesus comes and he says, no more. No more. Jesus came to establish a new covenant. And that's what the Pharisees didn't understand. They didn't get that. They expected Jesus to just pop on the scene and just follow their traditions. Continue with the Old Testament, or the Old Covenant law, rather. Keep up a bunch of rules, a bunch of do's and don'ts. Maybe just reinforce it a little bit. But he didn't. He established something completely new. Jesus didn't come to reinforce or repair the old covenant. He came to replace it. He came to replace it. You see, that's the thing about the old covenant law. It was never meant to be permanent. We talked with the children earlier about how Paul in Galatians chapter 3 speaks of the law as a tutor that leads us to Christ. It was never meant to be permanent. It's meant to point us to Jesus. But what the Pharisees did is they kept on insisting that people keep a bunch of rules, keep a bunch of rituals and sacrifices. And Jesus says that won't work. The old covenant has served its purpose. It's worn out. It's obsolete. It's time for something new. In the new covenant, with the coming of the gospel, devotion to God isn't about following the rules, dotting all your I's, crossing all your T's. It's about regeneration. New, being given new spiritual life on the inside. It's about repentance. Like a genuine, heartfelt turning from sin. It's about hearts that are changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so how does this apply to us? All this business about the old not fitting with the new. Just very simply, as believers, we need to remember that we're under the new covenant now. We're under the law of Christ, as it's referred to. We're not bound by the restrictions of the old covenant law anymore. And you say, well, duh, I know that, of course. But do we really? How often, even within the church, do we have this tendency to fall into old covenant type behavior? How often do we reduce the Christian life down to a bunch of do's and don'ts? And we make those things indicators of true spirituality, true godliness. So for example, Christians don't drink, they don't go to movies, they don't dance, they don't smile, and they don't do anything on Sunday other than go to church. And then there's another camp that goes hard in the other direction that says we do all those things, every last one of them, because we're not legalistic. Okay, won't argue with that. It's just a different kind of self-righteousness. And what we need to realize is that the old covenant behavior has no place in the life of a new covenant believer. It won't work. It doesn't match. The things that mark a new covenant believers, joy and gladness, not the drudgery of trying to keep a bunch of rules. Like I said, imagine if every Sunday, Sunday after Sunday, you got to show up with an animal to sacrifice. Or if you couldn't pray whenever and wherever you wanted to, you had to go through a priest at a particular time. And the new covenant is not like that. You don't have to offer sacrifices other than the sacrifice of praise, because you realize that the one sacrifice of Jesus Christ is sufficient. It's a done deal. No more sacrifices left to be made. You can pray to God whenever and wherever you want. You don't have to go to anybody, not a priest, not me, not Pastor Davis. You can go directly to God yourself. Why? Because for the believer, Jesus Christ is your great high priest. The new covenant believer is characterized by freedom. Freedom. Freedom to sin? By no means, as Paul says. How can we who died to sin still live in it? Or do you not know that all of us who were baptized into Christ were baptized into his death? We were buried, therefore, with him by baptism into death in order that what? Just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we too might walk in newness of life. That's what the gospel does. Brothers and sisters, we have freedom in the new covenant, and that freedom comes from being united to Jesus Christ, being married to him. Everything in life for the believer is geared around Jesus Christ. Life for the follower of Jesus Christ is like a wedding, full of joy and celebration and rejoicing in what? In the bridegroom, in him, in Jesus. As believers, our hearts have been changed by the gospel. God has actually written his law on our hearts. You see that in Jeremiah 31. He promised to do that. In the gospel, he has. He changes us from the inside out. He gives us the Holy Spirit and who empowers us to live lives of love and obedience to Jesus from the heart. And the sad reality is that there are some people here this morning who will hear this, all this talk of the freedom that Jesus brings and the joy that comes with knowing him, being united to him, and they'll be just fine with all their rules, all their outward appearances of religion. That's what Jesus is getting at when he says what he does in verse 29. Look there quickly. It says, and no one after drinking old wine desires new. For he says, the old is good. I like my empty religion just fine. Thank you. Some folks are just fine going through the motions, looking all spiritual on the outside, all the while trying to cover up a filthy heart. A songwriter by the name of Derek Webb, I can't remember the song right offhand now, but there's a line in the song that says, you'd be surprised what you can do with a hard heart. You can come here Sunday in, Sunday out, heart as stone, and just go through the motions. You'd be surprised what you can do with an unregenerate heart, with a heart that's not been changed by the gospel. You can come here and play games and have everybody fooled. But for the followers of Jesus, things are different. We're done with dead religion. Done with fruitless rituals and rule keeping. We've entered into the joy and the freedom and celebration that comes from being united to Jesus, the bridegroom. And so for us now, all of life revolves around him. Our lives are inseparably linked to him. Like, why would you want to trade that? Why would you want, instead of that, lifeless rule-keeping when you can know the joy and freedom that comes from knowing Jesus? I just encourage you. Like, if that's you, if that's where you are, even if you've been in this church or some other church for however many years, like, if that characterizes where you are really, playing games, going through the motions, heart just as filthy as all get out, not changed by the gospel, I encourage you, talk to somebody. Talk to a believer who's here. Grab myself. Pedro's there and Don in the back. Grab one of us, and we'd be glad to tell you about the joy that's found in Jesus Christ.